ओम गणेश जनंदनोपय चक्षुषमंदन तस्म श्री गुरुवेन्द्र श्री चैतन्यमनिष्टमस्तपिचन्द्रमनुतरे स्वयं रूपसुदानी पञ्चपदपूजस्य Krishna continues after having described the process of getting knowledge and described knowledge's end, the end of all the different austerities and sacrifice and in transcendental knowledge, and that is obtained by approaching the spiritual master. And then, what does one actually learn by approaching the spiritual master? That this part of Krishna, this is who we are, and that we are in him, we belong to him. Now, if you have this transcendental knowledge, what happens? What is the benefit of this transcendental knowledge? We've been hearing about this. Now, Krishna will directly speak this in text 36. Apiched asi pape bhya sabhe bhya papakritama sabam jnanam sa neve naiva virjinam santarishyasi. Even if you are considered to be the most sinful of all sinners, apiched asi pape bhya, even if you are considered to be the most sinful of all sinners, even if you are carrying so much reaction to previous inappropriate sinful deeds that you've performed. When you are situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, you'll be able to cross the ocean of miseries. So a boat has a particular function. It is for crossing. So the boat of transcendental knowledge gives one the ability to cross an ocean of material misery. And what is the nature, what's the difference between an ocean and a river? I mean, there's obviously many differences, but is there anywhere that a river is as huge as an ocean? A river has boundaries, it has banks, but the ocean doesn't have banks, it doesn't flow on either through the different banks, it's vast, it's unlimited. So this ocean is compared to an ocean of miseries. So the material existence is an ocean of miseries. Favorable viewpoint on material existence. I've heard learned professors sometimes just not be able to accept, not devotee professors and not Vaishnavas, not coming from the Indian tradition, but rather coming from the West. Very intelligent man, very pious man, but he just couldn't accept that the material world meant suffering. He couldn't accept it. And this is the foundational principle of spiritual life, that it's not possible for one to find happiness in the material world, because there is an incompatibility between the soul that is eternal and his material situation, his body which is inhabiting temporarily. So this is a foundational principle of the whole Vedic culture, the difference between the soul and the body. It's based on that part of transcendental knowledge, and based upon that we understand that birth, janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, birth, death, old age, disease, these are forced upon a living entity, and it's not favorable, it's not pleasant, it makes the material world quite a place of suffering. Not that there's no happiness here, but it's all temporary and flickering, and there's the predominance of misery. So upon this principle is with the Buddhist religion extracted from the Hindu culture, so to speak. So that's the first principle of Buddhism, that the material world means suffering. It's simply unavoidable. So it's so unavoidable that here it's compared to what?
An
ocean and its vastness. You cannot find the shore. So the picture that's given is that we are placed in this ocean of material suffering. So it's like if you take an ant and throw him in a huge, huge ocean. Now what is the hope for an ant? He can just, how do you say in Hindi, what's the word for ant? I know in Bengali. Yeah. It takes a Delhi boy to know these things. In Gondomwa, Gombaye.
Struggling.
No, ant.
Nai.
Nai. In Tagalog?
Langam.
Langam. Mm. That's a big word for a little thing. In Bengali it's pipri, pipra also. So an ant in an ocean, what hope does he have? Only if he can find something to crawl upon that will give him safety, and that is the boat. So what is the boat in this vast ocean of material misery? It is transcendental knowledge. And what is the transcendental knowledge? Krishna has explained this in the previous verse. The transcendental knowledge is that we are part of Krishna, we are in Him, and we belong to Him. And how does one get that? He explained that in the verse prior, by approaching the Tattvadarshi spiritual master. So even if you're considered to be the most sinful of all sinners, even if you're the worst of all swimmers, even if you can't even swim one stroke, do you know how to swim? You know how to swim? You know how to swim? Do you know how to swim?
Yeah.
Do you know how to swim? How do you say it? Yao sai. Of course you know how to swim. You know how to swim? No one will even admit it at this point if they don't. But even if you don't know how to swim, even a little, if Dr. Trini Matisi was here, we could see if we can get her to admit it. Even if you don't know how to swim at all, it doesn't make a difference if you're in the boat. So even if you're the most sinful of all sinners, when you're situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, you'll be able to cross over the ocean of miseries. So what is this verse glorifying?
We have to take the shelter of Supreme
Lord. What is the verse glorifying?
Transcendental knowledge.
Transcendental knowledge. And the knowledge is that we're part of Krishna. And therefore, and we're feeling ourselves separated from Him, and we should take shelter of Him because that's our relationship with Him. He is our Lord, we are His servant. Purport. Proper understanding of one's constitutional position. What does constitutional position mean? But what does constitutional mean? But what does constitution mean?
Designated position of existence.
Like what is the constitution of a country? What is? Okay, but it's more. It's found very basic and foundational. So a basic and essential foundational position in relationship to Krishna. So proper understanding of one's constitutional, basic, foundational principle in relationship with Krishna is so nice that it can at once lift one from the struggle for existence which goes on in the ocean of nescience. So what is the ocean of nescience? What does nescience mean?
Ignorance.
So what is the opposite of ignorance?
Knowledge.
So we're talking about transcendental knowledge in the material world. Is the ocean is ignorance. And what is it ignorance of? People in the material world, they know so many things. They know binary calculations, systems for binary calculations. And with that, you can build A. You can program A when you know binary.
Come on.
Yeah, we can do the coding.
Yes, you can do the codings. You can make computer programs.
Yes.
And it's all based on zeros and ones. Zero, one, only binary.
Yeah.
You know that?
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. If you knew so many facts like that, you would still be in the ocean of ignorance. Because the ocean of ignorance is filled with so many things like that. Like who's the president of the United States?
Obama.
Yeah, who's the best cricket player?
One of the
cricket players, that's very good. A bit non-committal, but everyone's happy with it. Who's the what's a good silly question? Who's the richest man in the world? You should go into politics. You're good at that. Person with the most money. Have you considered a career in either politics or insurance sales? Okay. See, all these facts, they're all parts of the ocean of events. They don't add up to anything. When you're in a boat, will any of these things help you? No. If you know how many windows are on the Empire State Building. Do you happen to know? I could easily bluff everyone right now. But no. But it's all the material knowledge is on that level. It's just ultimately not truly helpful when one is in the ocean of ignorance. We think that they're helpful because they help us in the ocean, but eventually we will go down. So transcendental knowledge, not material knowledge. Transcendental knowledge lifts us at once from the struggle of existence which goes on in the ocean of nescience, of ignorance. This material world is sometimes regarded as an ocean of nescience, and sometimes as a blazing fire. Which do you prefer? Would you like to drown in the ocean of misery, or would you like to burn in the blazing fire of material existence? It's your choice. And in the ocean, however expert a swimmer one may be, the struggle for existence is very severe. If someone comes forward and lifts the struggling swimmer from the ocean, he is the greatest savior. Perfect knowledge received from the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the path of liberation. The boat of Krishna consciousness is very simple, but at the same time, the most sublime. Now, Krishna describes in the 12th chapter something very interesting about being in the ocean of material existence, because he says, Tesham aham samudatma Mrityam Samsara Sagara. This is 12.6, if you're interested in looking at it. That I am the deliverer, the swift deliverer from the ocean of samsara, of material existence. Mrityam Samsara Sagara. That literally means the ocean of death and rebirth from material existence. O son of Krita, for them, those who are engaged in devotional service, here, I'll read the whole verse here. Those who worship me, giving up all their activities unto me, those who have transcendental knowledge and are acting according to it, and being devoted to me without deviation, engaged in devotional service and always meditating upon me, having fixed their minds upon me, O son of Krita. For them I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. So the same point, those who applied this transcendental knowledge. Now listen to what Prabhupada says in the purport here. We won't read the whole purport, we read just one paragraph from out of four. The purport, he gives, there's a verse that he's quoted, the Prabhupada quotes from the Varaha Purana. The purport of this verse is that a devotee does not need to practice Astanga Yoga in order to transfer his soul to the supreme spiritual planet. The responsibility is taken by the Supreme Lord himself. That means if one acts upon transcendental knowledge and does the activities that are mentioned here, fully focusing on Krishna in devotional service, the responsibility to deliver one from the ocean of nascence is taken by the Supreme Lord himself. He clearly states here that he himself becomes the deliverer. A child is completely cared for by his parents, and thus his position is secure. Similarly, a devotee does not need to endeavor to transfer himself by yoga practice to other planets. Rather, the Supreme Lord, by his great mercy, comes at once, riding on his bird carrier Garuda, and at once delivers the devotee from material existence. Although a man who has fallen in the ocean may struggle very hard and may be very expert in swimming, he cannot save himself. But if someone comes and picks him up from the water, then he is easily rescued. Similarly, the Lord picks up the devotee from this material existence. One simply has to practice the easy process of Krishna consciousness and fully engage himself in devotional service. So that is the transcendental knowledge that one has to practice that will enable Krishna, or not enable, but inspire Krishna to come and deliver one, protect one, save one. So why does Krishna need that inspiration? Because the two verses that I'm thinking of, one where he says, Samoham Savabhuteshu Name Dvesyasti Stinapriya, that he's equal to everyone. He's like the judge who just applies the law equal to everyone. What's supposed to happen is the judge is the repository of the law, and when there's a case, he just applies it. So he's neutral in that sense. He's neutrally applying the law. But ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya mayati te sikshapyaham. But when one is a devotee, Krishna treats him quite differently. He treats him with personal care. There is no need for one to consider Prabhupada. He concludes his purport by saying, there's no need for one to consider the sinful actions of his past life because the Supreme Lord fully takes charge of him. Therefore, one should not futilely, uselessly, try to deliver himself in spiritual realization. Let everyone take shelter of the Supreme, Omnipotent Godhead Krishna. That is the highest perfection of life. So, Krishna continues glorifying transcendental knowledge. As the blazing fire turns firewood to, what does a fire turn firewood to? Ashes. O Arjuna, so does the fire of knowledge burn to ashes all reactions to material activities. In this world there's nothing so sublime, exalted and wonderful as and pure. There's nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism, and one who has become accomplished or expert in the practice of devotional service enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. So what causes one to gain this transcendental knowledge? One who has become accomplished in the practice of devotional service. In other words, the art of working for Krishna's pleasure, not only working and not only performing the externals of the activity, but the internals, making the service or work devotional, bhakti. So that brings it. Work, so Krishna's combining the two concepts of knowledge and work together. And that when you combine knowledge and work together, you have ultimately devotional service. Because again, people tend to think that only those interested in getting some enjoyable object, those are the people who work, because there's no one, because that's what it impels people to work when they want something. So if you don't want anything of the material world, then you naturally think there's no need for me to work to do anything. But when one has knowledge, one not only understands that there's nothing for the soul to gain in the material world, but he understands more than that, that I'm Krishna's servant, and his work is no longer this work, but it's service to Krishna. Text 39. A faithful man who is dedicated to transcendental knowledge and who subdues his senses is eligible to achieve such knowledge, and having achieved it, he quickly attains the supreme spiritual peace. So one needs to control one's senses. First you have knowledge, first you have to have faith, and then when you have faith, when you have knowledge and you have faith in the knowledge, then you dedicate yourself to that knowledge. And that automatically implies that you have to subdue your senses. You have to control your mind and senses, because you're not going to act for oneself, selfish endeavors, but one is going to act for Krishna's pleasure. That's what transcendental knowledge means. And then as soon as one becomes disciplined into not serving his mind and senses, but serving Krishna based on transcendental knowledge, then he quickly attains the supreme spiritual peace. That means he attains devotional service. So in the next chapter, spiritual peace is described by knowing that Krishna is the Sridam Sarvabhutanam. He is the Surit, or the most dear friend, and the Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, he is the supreme controller. Again, these are knowing these things, Jatvamam Shantim Rishati, that he is meant everything, same points. He is the one who all sacrifices are offered to. He is the supreme controller, and he is also the dearest friend. Knowing this, Jatvamam Shantim Rishati, one attains the highest peace. And then, if one doesn't trust this, what happens to him? What happens to those who don't attain transcendental knowledge? Ignorant, but ignorant and faithless persons who doubt the revealed scriptures do not attain God consciousness. They fall down. For the doubting soul, there is happiness neither in this world nor in the next. Avgyas, that's a fool who has no knowledge in standard scriptures, and asraddhadana. Agyas cha, asraddhadananas cha, and samsayatma. So those without faith, those who are foolish, and a samsayatma means those who doubt. Vinasyati, they fall back. Nayam loko astina paro nasukha samsayatmana. They fall back and they don't have happiness either in this world nor in the future world. Quite heavy. This is Prabhupada's purport. Out of many standard and authorized revealed scriptures, the Bhagavad Gita is the best. Persons who are almost like animals have no faith in or knowledge of the standard revealed scriptures, and some, even though they have knowledge of or can recite passages from the revealed scriptures, have no actual faith in these words. And even though others may have faith in the scriptures like Bhagavad Gita, they do not believe in or worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Such persons cannot have any standing in Krishna consciousness. They fall down. Out of all the above-mentioned persons, those who have no faith and are always doubtful make no progress at all. Men without faith in God and His revealed word find no good in this world nor in the next. For them, there's no happiness whatsoever. Teddy. Text 41. And therefore, this is the next to last verse in this chapter. Yoga sanyasta karmanam. My devotional service in karma yoga. Yoga sanyasta. One who has renounced. One who is working in karma yoga or devotional service. And sanyasta has renounced karmanam. Has renounced the fruit of his work. Jnanam. San Tina Samsayam. By the fruits of his actions, by knowledge, San Tina, he has cut Samsayam, all doubts. Atma Vantam Nakarmani, and situated in the self, Nibananti Dhananjaya. All the work he does doesn't bind him. Because that was Arjuna's great fear and his main reason for wishing to leave the battlefield is if I engage in this work or this killing, this fighting, then I'm going to be so entangled in the sinful reactions, I'm going to suffer so much. So here Krishna is reaching the conclusion of this chapter on transcendental knowledge. One who acts in devotional service, who's renounced and working in karma yoga, renouncing the fruits of his actions, working for Krishna's pleasure, not trying to get the fruits, whose doubts have been destroyed by transcendental knowledge, is situated factually in the self. Thus he is not bound by the reactions of work, or conqueror of riches. So what does it mean to be situated factually in the self? What does that mean? To be in the self, we usually don't think of that. Think in those terms. What does it mean to be in the self? Huh? One who is situated in the self.
Understands who you are.
Yeah. Self-knowledge. And who are we? We're
soul.
Huh? But not only a soul.
Soul.
Yeah. Right. That's what Krishna said. You'll understand that you are part of me. Eternally part of me, but in me and on mine.
Mm.
So who is situated As a soul, one who is in devotional service, renouncing the fruits of his actions, who his doubts have been destroyed by transcendental knowledge, is situated factually in the self. So he is actually in his self. One who's serving Krishna, he's acting as who he is. Now, so the implication is that now we are acting as we are not. And what are we not that we think we are? The body and the mind. And now we act as if we were bodies. So it's fun on a certain level, but what is the end of every body? Is to die. So that part isn't fun. And the function of every mind is to go like the pendulum of a clock. Or rather this way. Back and forth and back and forth. Sankalpa vikalpa. I want this, I don't want that. I don't want this, I want that. I like this, I don't like that. This is wonderful, this is terrible. I like him, I don't like him. No, I think I do like him, and I don't like him. No, I do like him. I'm great, I'm terrible. I'm the greatest. He's, everyone else is bad. No, actually, I'm the worst. I've made so many mistakes. No, I'm actually the best. This is the material mind all day long. I should do this. No, I shouldn't do that. I should do that. What should I do? So, that's being situated in the mind. And being situated in the body is always sukha dukkha daha. It's happiness and distress, and happiness and distress, and happiness and distress. And I want this, and I don't want that. I want the happiness. And how to move through distress? Pleasure, sense pleasure, this misery, that pleasure. My tooth hurts. My tooth is happy. My tongue is happy, but my toe hurts, and my finger is happy. And on and on and on and on. How's your tooth, by the way? Before it was a bit worse. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So it goes from better to worse, the better to worse.
It says to me, well, you stop doing that and it seems to be okay. It reacts somehow, something in my body. Mm-hmm.
Sesame oil is heating.
Organic sesame oil is
heating. It gives a lot of heat, that's why it's used to remove wind in the body.
There you go, Dr. Hema.
That's how it is. I did a bit of Ayurveda.
It's not good for toothaches.
No, it's very good for my toothaches, but that's a different subject. But the point being,
you're not that tooth.
I'm not my tooth. I'm neither happy tooth nor sad tooth. So, a person who acts in devotional service is situating himself because he sees himself as an eternal servant of Krishna. So, Prabhupada has a short purport here. One who follows the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita as it is imparted by the Lord, as it is spoken by the Lord, the personality of God himself becomes free from all doubts by the grace of transcendental knowledge. He, as a part and parcel of the Lord, is full Krishna consciousness, in full Krishna consciousness, is already established in self-knowledge. As such, he is undoubtedly above bondage to actions. Therefore, Krishna concludes, Tasmad Agyana Sambhava Sambhutam. Therefore, the doubts which have arisen in your heart out of ignorance should be slashed, cut by the weapon of knowledge, and armed with yoga, O Bharata, stand and fight. So we'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. The yoga system instructed in this chapter is called Sanatana Yoga, or eternal activities performed by the living entity. Now, when we usually think of yoga, what do we usually think of?
Stretching.
Asanas. Mostly we think of asanas, yes? You think of asanas when you think of yoga? What do you think of? Huh?
Breathing.
Breathing. I thought you were going to say yogurt. Strawberry yogurt. So one can't perform other kinds of yogas eternally. One can't stretch. I mean, it would be, if all you were doing is stretching, then I mean, you'd get very tired of it. Or even all you were doing was breathing. Or eating strawberry yogurt. You couldn't do that eternally. But bhakti yoga is sanatana yoga, it is eternal. You could do it eternally. Other processes of yoga and tapasya you do to gain something else. But bhakti yoga itself is the gain of practicing bhakti yoga, and it can be done eternally again. So the yoga, this yoga, sanatana yoga, or eternal activities performed by the living entity, this yoga has two divisions of sacrificial actions, one called sacrifice of one's material possessions, and the other is called knowledge of the self, which is pure spiritual activity. So knowledge of the self means activity. If sacrifice of one's material possessions is not dovetailed or used for spiritual realization, then such sacrifice becomes material. For one who performs such sacrifice with a spiritual objective or devotional service makes a perfect sacrifice. When we come to spiritual activities, we find that there are also these are also divided into two, namely understanding of one's own self or constitutional position and the truth regarding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who follows the path of Bhagavad Gita as it is can very easily understand these two important divisions of spiritual knowledge, the self and the Lord. For him, there is no difficulty in obtaining perfect knowledge of the self as part and parcel of Krishna, of the Lord. And such understanding is beneficial, so that combines the two knowledges. And such understanding is beneficial, for such a person can easily understand the transcendental activities of the Lord. In the beginning of this chapter, the transcendental activities of the Lord were discussed by the Supreme Lord himself. One who does not understand the instructions of the Lord is faithless, and is to be considered to be misusing the fragmental independence awarded to him by the Lord. In spite of such instructions, one who does not understand the real nature of the Lord as the eternal, blissful, all-knowing personality of Godhead is certainly fool number one. So what causes one to be categorized as fool number one?
Not knowing and not fishing.
But what specifically?
The real nature of the Lord.
Yeah, the real nature. So what is Prabhupada attacking here? Those who think that Krishna is what?
Impersonal.
Actually, the Supreme is impersonal, and when the impersonal comes to this world, he assumes a form composed of the mode of goodness and performs his activities in this world. The Absolute is impersonal. This is the typical Advaitavad philosophy. I've even read, there's this one Ramayana I read by one of India's most great, I don't know if he was a politician, but he was a great seeker of independence, and he was saying that, and it was a Ramayana, and he was saying that Lord Ramachandra is acting, he's the supreme, he's the Ishwara acting as a Kshatriya. And this shows that the modes of material nature are so powerful that even when God comes to this world, he's controlled by them.
That
makes sense. What? That makes sense. No, it doesn't make sense. But he, and this was a big man. I mean, by material estimation. So this, what Prabhupada is arguing against here, or criticizing, is something that's very dominant. The whole Mayavad philosophy people, that this is what they think, that there's no true eternal existence of Krishna. And therefore, if Krishna doesn't really, isn't eternally the Supreme God, and he isn't eternally the, he has an eternal body, and then what about his pastimes? They're also in the realm of Maya. And not only are his pastimes in Maya, if you think that he's, that his pastimes are eternal, or that he's the Supreme Lord, then you're also in Maya. This is what they think. And devotion, and then your service is also all in the modes of material nature. So this is completely opposite of what Krishna's saying here. So Prabhupada, he says it's faithless. And he talks about perfect knowledge and faulty knowledge. So it's obviously, so after reading the Bhagavad Gita, if one doesn't understand these points, one fails the examination. It's like Prabhupada gave the example. He said, after reading two-thirds of the Ramayana, then you say, excuse me, I have a question. And what's the question? Who, again, I can't remember, who, Ramachandra is whose mother? So what does that mean? After hearing two-thirds of the Ramayana, and that's the question you ask, what would that mean? Yeah, you haven't really understood even, you don't have no idea what's going on. So, so Prabhupada criticizes these people. In spite of such instructions that Krishna has given, one who does not understand the real nature of the Lord as the eternal, blissful, all-knowing personality of Godhead, this is who is speaking, his position, this is Krishna's position. He's certainly a fool number one, just like the person who asked after reading two-thirds of the Ramayana, I have one question. Everything is wonderful, but I have one question. I understand everything, but I have one question. Whose mother is Ram? So how to remove the ignorance? It can be removed by gradual acceptance of the principles of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada continues, one should therefore follow the path of Bhagavad Gita as it is expressed in the Gita itself, and beware of self-interested people who, after personal aggrandizement, who deviate others from the actual path. The Lord is definitely the Supreme Person, and his activities are transcendental. One who understands this is a liberated person from the very beginning of his study of the Bhagavad Gita. That's in the Bhaktivedanta purports to the fourth chapter of Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of transcendental knowledge. Okay, thank you. Any questions? But no one should ask, you know what?
Yes. So, to affirm something, so transcendental knowledge, acquiring transcendental knowledge or aspiring to it, is not in the category of Dhyana Yoga.
No, the path of Jnana Yoga is something quite different. It's a path of understanding that one is a soul, and then by the power of one's knowledge, one extricates oneself from material activities, from the material world. So, and Bhakti Yoga, there's transcendental knowledge attached to Bhakti Yoga, but that's quite different. Because otherwise, when Prahlad Maharaj, when he defined iti pumsarpito bhakti navalakshana, there are nine aspects of bhakti yoga. One is shravanam, one is kirtanam, vishnu smaranam. So this is what we're doing. This is devotional service.
So jnana yoga can only take you to the platform of bhakti acting without being attached to the results.
Yeah.
Bhakti Yoga, Buddhi Yoga offers the results to Krishna.
not only offers the results, but works for the, does the activity for the pleasure of Krishna. Because there's a difference between just offering the results to Krishna and working for the pleasure of Krishna. If you work for Krishna, then you also offer him naturally the results. But it's not like a job. So there's a difference between bhakti yoga. Slight difference. So jnana marga is something quite different. And sometimes the jnanis perform some bhakti to get the fruit of their work. They'll even do things like worship the deity as part of their jnana yoga. But their goal is impersonal.
In this loka 40-39, transcendental knowledge is described by Krishna as Brahman. So when I read things, I get a bit confused.
Okay, say again.
Where? 39.
Yeah.
Transcendental knowledge is described as Jnanam. This is knowledge in the sort of what for what synonym, but in translation, it says transcendental knowledge.
If you work, the basic idea, what Krishna is explaining here, is to make the distinction between jnana, knowledge that you're not your body, and then that means you shouldn't work. So he's putting jnana and work together, because as the practical process for advancement. So there's different levels that one can put jnana and work together. One is, if your jnana is at the level of impersonalism, you'll just be detached from the work. If your jnana is still higher, that you understand that your Krishna is part and parcel, then your work will be still different from either the materialist or the jnani. And then if your jnana is on the level, you could say, if you know that Krishna is everything to you and you love him, then you're doing everything for him through your work. So you can, just like the Braja Gopis. So we don't usually think of them as having jnana or knowledge. But their level of understanding of Krishna, he's everything for us. He's our village boy. They had so much love for him that every single thing they did was for his pleasure. Not officially, not just giving the fruit. But while they were working, whatever it was they were doing, they were just simply thinking of Krishna and doing it for his pleasure. So there's different levels of jnana. So you can say that the highest level of jnana, so there's one level is to know that you're not your body. Another level is to know that you're a servant of Krishna. That's who you are. That's complete. And then that brings you to surrender. And surrender brings you to go through the process of detachment and attachment to Krishna, which ends in prema.
So which stage does jnana yoga sort of and transcendental knowledge begin?
Well, no, the jnana yoga is also transcendental knowledge. But the knowledge is on a lower level. It's like if you walk into a first grade class and you say, what do you learn in math today, mathematics? And they say, 1 and 1 is 2. So is that knowledge of mathematics? Yes. And then you go into the 12th grade class and they're learning differential equations and A squared plus B squared, the derivative of this, and on and on and on. So that's also mathematics, but it's much, much higher. And it's based on the earlier principle. But the person who's in the first grade, who's on the 1 and 1 is 2 level, may not have any idea. They may think, what? A squared plus B squared? What does that have to do with mathematics? That's just nonsense. Huh? So it's not that one and one is two is wrong, but it's just, but as you progress, you learn more. So it's, so when does jnana yoga turn into bhakti, if that's what you're saying? So what the way it's described in the Bhagavad Gita is, there's two ways it's described. One way is a gradual path. First you work, then you work, then you have knowledge that I'm an eternal soul, then, and then you understand that there is, that that the absolute truth is everywhere, and then he's everywhere as the Paramatma, and then the, and then you understand that the Paramatma is more a person. So as you could be engaged in work that whole time, but your knowledge is increasing as you're increasing from the first grade to the 12th grade, for example. Or at any point by association, you can accept what Krishna is actually saying and transfer over to the bhakti part of the ladder. And then you will go through similar stages, getting more detached, more attached to Krishna. But you'll be on the bhakti side the whole time. So that's what Prabhupada is always emphasizing. Everything is actually bhakti. Is relevant on the bhakti level. Is that clear? Okay, so ask your question again and see if you, the question you just asked, and see if you have the answer now.
Question is, does transcendental knowledge, does jnana yoga include transcendental knowledge? I've got the question already. I can't remember the question anymore.
Well, just look at it and see if you can remember what the question is. I mean, we'll see if you can remember, to see if you understand it, the answer. It had to do with one of the word by words.
Oh, well, in text 39.
Yeah. Does anyone else have any questions?
Yeah, I want to ask, the stones also have soul?
Sometimes.
Stone or, you know.
Sometimes. We've heard that there are, that previously mountains could fly.
Yeah.
And then Indra cut their wings. And we've also heard that stones have souls, some of them, but not all of them.
Yeah, because my question is, stone is also made up of this molecule, and this molecule is made up of this atoms, and in this atom, the nucleus, and is surrounded by the electrons, and the electrons are moving all the time so fast. So if something is moving, it means that it has to have some energy. So
yeah,
if something is moving, it is
moved by something.
By something.
Yeah.
I know that it's moved by the forces.
Yeah. So therefore, the question is, what if some stones are alive? Why don't they move?
It's all the things, everything.
So, wait, you have to make it a little clearer what you're asking.
No, I'm just saying that stone, he's just lying and it's not moving. But
oh, really? Did you ever do any farming? Did you ever do any farming? Of course, you're a Delhi boy. Delhi boys don't even know where potatoes come from.
Farming.
Farming. Do you ever see in the fields that
that
rocks come up?
Yes.
So, no, no? Well, yes, yes.
No, what I'm
but
mean
I'm,
to say is...
But I'm just trying to say that rocks do move.
Yes, rocks do move. Even the height of this Himalayas is increasing. So,
yes.
Stone and rock moves. But what I mean to say
yes.
is, see, even if this is a table,
yes.
and see, if you see in the microscope,
yes.
you will see it moving
yes.
in some way.
Yes.
Atomic composition.
Yes, atomic composition.
On the atomic level, yes.
So, if something is moving, it has to have some...
Not, it does, it has, something has to be moving it.
Yes, so what is moving it?
It's what is moving what? The table or the stone or...
Electrons.
Yes, electrons, how...
Krishna is also in every atom and between every atom.
What I mean to say is that these atoms also have souls?
they have super souls, even better than souls. But in every atom there is a super soul.
So that means that we have so many souls.
Inside you, yeah, because you have also little bacteria and things like that.
Yeah.
But you're like the boss, like the king. You're the king in this kingdom. And so many worms also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we have worms and this bacteria, and this bacteria also have souls.
Yes.
So
you're not the only one. And you're not charging rent. You're so kind. You have a big house, and so many millions and billions of living entities live inside. And you're the king. Well, who is that? Not the bacteria. You're like the chief soul, the boss.
Smaller boss.
Also, yeah. But there are even smaller bosses. But they think, and also some of the parasites, the bugs, have bugs in them. Quite amazing, isn't it, if you think about it? And even the cells, the question is whether cells are alive, because they actually go through the different transformations. Because we usually judge life by having, what do they call it, six different transformations. Birth, growth, maintenance, dwindling, dying, and
something,
and reproduction in the middle of that. So cells actually go through those processes. So one would think that cells are alive if they have the symptoms of life. And therefore, what deep philosophical question would you like to ask?
That we are the combination of so many souls. But
no, we are not the combination of so many souls. Our body is the
Yeah.
There are so many souls living in the body, but we are just one soul. That's me. But each one of those souls has a sense of me. Every little bacteria, like a fly. Do you think the flies have a sense of me?
No.
Why? Why do you think that? Sometimes if they're in the trap in the room, they can't get out, and they come over and at least they do that to me.
But they don't have.
How do you, okay, you say it's the instinct of survival, but who has the instinct of survival?
Who has life?
Yeah, but why do you say the?
It's because they have this me.
Yeah, because otherwise someone would think, well, you're doing what you're doing because you have the instinct of survival. I mean, it's just a silly way to say the same thing. Do human beings, do they just running on instinct?
No.
That's just words, Zagzaria, it seems to me.
A human being is like, he's on the top of, the chain, so we are meant to be spiritually.
No, but that wasn't my question. My question is, what is the difference between, did you ever see a cow lick the calf out of love? And they say that's just instinct. And did you ever see the mother embrace the child and kiss the child? And that's not instinct. What is it? Of course, the same. And when they take the calf from the baby, the calf from the mother, what does the mother do? Cries. Oh, that's just instinct. But when the humans do exactly the same thing, oh, that's completely different. How is it completely different? The birds at a young age, they learn how to fly. That's instinct. And human beings learn how to walk. They have a naturally inborn impulse to walk. So is there any difference?
No.
I mean, there's difference of the bodies and how these things are expressed. But that's just, it's just a ridiculous philosophy. I mean, not that you were putting forward this philosophy, but to show that only humans are alive or something. Only humans have souls. That's actually part of some Christian philosophy. That only humans have souls, so therefore we can kill the animals. Does that make any sense? Only humans have souls. Then what's the difference? Oh, their instincts. That's silly talk, seems to me. What do you think? So the devotee is so respectful to all living entities and tries not to kill even an ant. And people with no knowledge, they'll kill them. What's the difference?
But they won't kill a dog.
Well, it depends.
You can go to Korea and then...
But where they have sentiment, they won't kill.
No, they'll kill other dogs, not their own. Crazy.
So they don't even.
How about if the insects or, let's say, mosquitoes are bugging you at night? You should respect all living entities. You should remember that Paramatma, the Super Soul, is situated inside them. So give them respect in that way, according to your manifestation.
So there's two points. One is, there's a theoretical philosophical principle, and then there's some, you act practically. So, but your practical action should be based on the philosophical principle as much as you practically can.
I mean, obviously, if the room is full of mosquitoes, then you have to take some action to...
Well, maybe there's ways to get rid of them without just killing them, too.
I mean, not killing them, but yeah.
You can drive them out. Because there's a certain time when you're awake here. Dusk. How would you get rid of them? With me? Is that true? If you chew neem, Sri Radharaman says, that's what they say, that your blood becomes bitter and the mosquitoes don't like it. But also, in India, what they used to do is they used to like light dhuni, frankincense and things like that when it's dusk. And then all the mosquitoes would leave. They would light that in the room. And it leaves such a suspicious feeling and everything. Then the mosquitoes leave at dusk because they don't like the smoky atmosphere. They go out the windows and they don't come back because they only have two times of the day when they're active, mosquitoes. And there's also a mosquito net. Also odomos, yes.
There's a little electrical light thing, the blue light.
That kills them.
all out.
Go to sleep. All out.
Yes, call all out.
I know.
That's
true. I know that one.
One breathing, one breathing emits the sound, and one emits electricity.
Yeah, one sort of just draws them in and kills them. The other one sort of.
I never saw that one. Anyway, this conversation is getting, it's going in an interesting far out direction. But yes, it's practical. But if you have, that's why you can't, like in the Jain religion, so they wear the masks so they don't kill anyone. Yeah, and brooms and everything. But of course, but that, but still you kill. They have to eat.
And that's what they first is, minimize it.
As much as possible. Anyway. Because you don't want to, because it's completely natural. It's not the highest point of the Vaishnava philosophy, but it's completely natural if you become a little purified that you don't want to cause pain to any living entity. And therefore, you're expert in catching flies, yes? And putting them outside the house so you don't have to kill them. Yes? Do you know how to do that?
Never know.
Do you know how to? I will give you that transcendental knowledge one day. Because I'm getting too slow nowadays. I have to transfer this knowledge. Fly catching. Okay.
One more question.
Yes, Paul.
One of the slokas, Krishna says that the blazing fire of knowledge will burn everything to ashes.
Not everything.
Fire to ashes.
It doesn't say
fire
everything.
Of knowledge also burns to ashes all reactions and material activities.
Yes.
Knowledge, this transcendental knowledge will burn all the sinful activities of one's many, many lives, times to ashes. Is that what it's meant? And this knowledge will be a realized knowledge, and one has to practice that, because not just by knowing.
Not just by knowing.
Knowing
if you know that
your constitutional position and.
Not theoretically. Yeah. You have to practice it,
practice
actually.
It.
But if you actually have the knowledge, you'll practice it.
That means it's a gradual process that all these will be eradicated on the.
No, not necessarily. Because it's also said that. Just by chanting the name of Krishna one time, like Ajamil. Nama Bhasya Vaite Hai Sava Papachai. All sinful reactions are removed. And then there's the Parabdha Karma and Aparabdha Karma. So, it's a little bit of a complicated point. But even it describes that, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that when if you chant Hare Krishna one time without offense, then all your sinful reactions are removed, and also all sinful reactions from activities you may perform in the future are also removed. So it's not gradual. So then, but Krishna keeps like a semblance of the karma that we have, because if we had no karma, we wouldn't have a body. And how would we improve? How would we become more? How would we make advancement? So Krishna takes over the devotee's life.
And Krishna was born to some of the karma.
No, not exactly. He doesn't give you the karma, he gives you what he wants to give you.
But isn't it part of that person's karma that Krishna is holding?
What do you mean holding?
That means earlier you mentioned that Krishna is not going to eradicate all the karma, so that because he needs to have a body, he must have some karma, isn't it?
But he doesn't give you your karma as it is. He becomes in charge of what happens to you. And he generally works through your karma, but he's not bound by working through your karma. So therefore, tateno kampamsu sumichmano, therefore, a devotee thinks, I deserve worse. But Krishna has minimized the bad I'm getting. I didn't deserve this good, but Krishna has given me something beyond what I deserve. It's Krishna who's working. That's how the devotee sees.
So are the karmas destroyed or?
Yes.
They destroy by each other.
Yeah. If by offense of chanting. Namabasi then.
But even if you're chanting the offenses, then you can.
But chanting offenselessly is simple. Just Ajamil did it just by calling his son Narayan. That's different. There are three stages. There's offensive chanting, chanting with no offenses, and then there's love for Krishna. So chanting with no offenses brings liberation, but it doesn't bring love for Krishna.
But even if you're not, if someone chants,
Even if someone just says Rama,
I'm saying offenseless.
You could, like Ajamil was calling his son, and he was saying Narayan. He wasn't thinking of Lord Narayan, and he, all his sinful reactions were removed. He was calling his son. So, yeah. This is described in.
Anyone who is chanting on a regular basis, then Krishna is taking
care of them.
So, whatever happens, it's due to Krishna putting them in that position to make them progress.
Or to teach them a lesson. Yeah, to make, yeah. That's, if you see like that, it's wonderful. That's wonderful vision.
And because I'm in Ireland, there are some sudden things that happen. I just tend to see that it's helped them. I mean, from what I see, it's helped them move closer in Krishna or some other thing that have happened to some.
To live in that way. With that kind of faith, you can be peaceful in this crazy material world. If you see yourself under Krishna. Otherwise it's not possible to be peaceful. That's a wonderful realization. Okay.